Delighted to welcome to the studio Marley Ryan, who is a new volunteer. She comes with more than 30 years' experience of broadcast television, so she's of great interest to us, and I hope to you as a listener. And I'm going to ask her to tell us a little about what she's done.
When I was studying my A-levels, I wanted to study sociology at degree level, and I actually applied to Kingston University, and I actually accepted. And I had a bit of a meltdown during the summer before I was about to go. I thought, I'm not sure I want to do sociology anymore. And during my sociology course, we'd done some media studies, and it kind of intrigued me. So over the course of the summer, I thought more and more about it, and at the end, I decided to go through the clearing system. And I thought, I just literally was looking for a TV or broadcast TV course.
So most of the people that you were working with are the people that were teaching you, and it would have been very practical in the sense, it was certainly not formal lectures, it would have been working with in groups.
Yes, it was a lot of group work for which we would take different roles. So one week you'd be the director, the next week you'd sort of be editing, and sometimes you'd be in front of camera, sometimes behind. So we took it in turns, which gave us kind of idea of where we might like to be in the industry. Our lecturers were mostly ex-industry people, people from the BBC who had mostly retired or decided to take a back step. So we had some great lecturers there who had some real hands-on experience, which they obviously try to teach us, but being students, I'm not sure how much we took it.
You got an MA in Contemporary Literature and Culture. Was that done immediately after?
It's something I always wanted to do. And I finally got the opportunity about 5 years ago. I went freelance and decided I can study and still work.
Because this is at Birkbeck, which
it was at Birkbeck University.
An adult university, if I'm correct.
It's adult learning, and it's an evening university. The lectures don't start until 6 o'clock, so it fits in if you're working. It's really hard work. I didn't realise quite how demanding it was with working, and then going straight to university afterwards, and then having to read a novel a week. I found it quite difficult. So I got through it. I did graduate, but I didn't go to the graduation ceremony because COVID happened and all the ceremonies were cancelled, which was a shame.
When you left to go back now to, then you finished the first degree, the media studies, then you wanted to find a job in broadcast television or film or whatever. And it was pretty tough, I imagine, in the beginning.
It was very difficult. And bearing in mind, it would have been around about 82, 83. There was still a lot of sort of difficulty around women applying for roles. A lot of the roles I was applying for, I was told I was probably too small or I wasn't strong enough to run around and lift a camera or do anything like that. So I did come across quite a lot of kind of negativity in that sense. It was a female manager that I met through one of the companies who actually took pity on me and took me in as a runner, and I was making teas and coffees and running around Soho fetching sandwiches and doing that kind of thing for about a year before I got my next job as a researcher. But it was a great experience, and Soho in those days was, as you might expect Soho to be, the girls were still around. It was still very much a kind of the leftover from the swing 60s and 70s. It's much changed now. It's completely a tourist area now. But that time, it was great fun. And really felt you were part of the film industry because you literally did have people running down one of the Soho streets with cans of film, and you'd see sort of film crews all over the place. It was a really good place to work.
Yes.
I did get a wage, and it was still unionised at that time. So if we worked overtime, we did actually get the overtime, which I think, again, a lot of that's changed.
Your first real job then after that was in research, which again is a traditional way into television, isn't it, for many people. What were you doing there?
I was researching for the Oprah Winfrey Show, which sounds very bizarre because it's actually made in the States. But Oprah had a huge research team, and her teams were trying to find stories from around the world. So she had different researchers and producers based in the UK, in Europe, South America, all around the world, who would feed her stories. So the producer and myself, the researcher, would be hunting for really Oprah-type stories. And if we found one, we'd go and set up the interviews and we would film them and send the footage to Oprah and to her editors to edit it as a package. So I spent most of my time scouring newspapers, early days of the internet, very early days, looking for stories that I thought would be Oprah worthy. It was, again, it was great fun. We probably got about one every 2 or 3 months. So, you know, it's quite tough work. We would send her lots of ideas, and her team would say, no, no, no. And then eventually we'd hit on one and bingo, we were there and we'd be filming it. So that was great kind of entry into the research level at on TV.
And where do you go from there?
Well, as a researcher, you can sort of take several different paths. So you can either go into producing or directing or production management. And I've done a bit of all of those things. It's a really good basis. It teaches you the sort of language of television, standard terms and what other people do. And also, if you're a researcher, you've always got the kind of like wherewithal to find a good story. And as you know, TV and media is built on good stories. Probably not the way into drama if you wanted to go into films and features, but it's certainly the way into documentaries, live entertainment and magazine type shows, which is where my background is really.
You mentioned three terms: director, producer and production management.
So production management is two terms. So you're basically looking after crew. You're managing their movements, where they go. You're booking hotels. You're booking travel. You're looking after them in a financial way too. You have to keep an eye on a budget. And obviously you're always in terminal arguments with the directors about how much money can be spent, because directors always want to spend lots of money on more lighting, on more crew, on better locations. There's a constant kind of battle between the production side of the management side of things and the actual sort of creative and director side of things. But I enjoy working with a crew, and I like being part of a team in that sense. It gives you a great sense of satisfaction at the end of the day if you've actually got through the day and you've actually shot what you've needed to shoot, and you know, everyone's sort of happy with the content. But I have done a little bit of directing as well, and I've done some producing as well. So
what have you directed, for instance?
I've directed a couple of children's programs, a program called Run for Your Life, which was following young athletes as they progressed, sort of around 15, 16-year-olds that were just starting to take their careers in athletics seriously. So they were at the beginning. And we were following about six of them through different sort of competitions they were doing, going through, their schoolwork, their social life, and how they were coping with the stresses of being an athlete at that age. And it's difficult to balance school life, GCSEs, and a sport where you're having to practice virtually every day, either before school or after school. And at weekends, you're doing competitions. So it's a huge commitment. But the kids were great, and it was just good to sort of like be with them along that journey. Some of them didn't quite make it to where they wanted to be, but others did. But it was great just to be around. And they were great letting us hang around with the film crew. Let's film them. Even when they'd lost a race, we had a camera in their faces sort of saying, how do you feel? It's a tough thing to do. We had a couple quite tearful, but it was interesting, I think, for other kids to see what it takes to be an athlete and the kind of dedication and the inner strength you need.
And that was really location shooting, wasn't it, wherever you were? Have you done studio-based stuff?
I've done studio-based as well. I worked on a programme called Fame Academy, which was a reality show, which was showcasing new talent. And it was a competition between the new talent to sort of see. It's one of those panel shows, a bit like Britain's Got Talent, Pop Idol, that kind of thing. It was one of those the BBC actually did. It wasn't successful as Britain's Got Talent, and the BBC dropped it after about 3 years. But I worked on that. It was a studio-based show. And that was crazy. It just seemed that we were always behind schedule. We were always losing the contributors. The BBC's a big place and all the corridors look the same. And it's very easy to get lost. And I did manage to lose a couple of people that were supposed to be on camera. That was stressful, I would say.
Have you worked on any of the newer streaming channels like Netflix or Amazon Prime?
Yeah, I was a post-production producer on a recent show for Netflix called Rebellion, which is about Extinction Rebellion, the environmental group. It was interesting because I was expecting it to be a documentary about their cause and what they were doing, but it was actually about the people who founded Extinction Rebellion. The people who actually shot it spent 3 years with them, just following them around, getting them again in every situation, their meetings, on protests. But there was a lot of friction between the founder members and the younger members and how it was going to go. Were they going to be more out there? Are they going to do some more like gluing themselves to public buildings? Are they going to be more extreme? Or were they going to sort of start taking the more Greenpeace route and do more kind of peaceful demonstrations? And that's when the group splintered. So it was really interesting just to watch the dynamic of a group like that, which you would think would be harmonious and everyone's on the same page. Absolutely not. So that's a great project, just to have that insight into an organisation which is basically all volunteers, but with like really strong opinions. It sounds like I've enjoyed everything, but I probably have really enjoyed most of the projects I've been on.
You described that one as you were in charge of the post-production, you were managing the post-production.
Yeah.
Which I assume means after it's been shot.
Yes. So it was shot by two women who came to my company and myself and said, we've got all this footage. We basically put them together with some editors and we sat down with them and went through what the storylines might be, what they might achieve by it. Was it going to be a series? Was it going to be a one-off? Which channels they should go to, how they should approach it, because at that time they didn't have a broadcaster and then Netflix picked it up. But every time we went to a different broadcaster, they wanted different things from the show. So it had lots of different re-edits and different cuts. And then it started hitting the festival market too, which documentary festivals around the world. And again, there were different cuts for each one. So the project went on for about 2 years and it did really well. It won quite a few awards in the festival circuit. I think it's done quite well on Netflix. But yeah, so we guided these two young filmmakers throughout the whole process and helped them just to sort of achieve their ambitions and their ideas. And they're now working on something else. So I hope their next project is going to be as good as this one.
This is very much they just wanted to do this issue and these people and didn't know what they were going to do with it afterwards. They just knew it was going to be a piece of television.
So, yeah, absolutely. It used to be called Fly on the Wall. Yes. I mean, I know there were some great documentaries in the 60s which were Fly on the Wall, which were just literally following people around. And that idea tends to be called reality these days, which the term I don't particularly like. But it is. It's kind of like getting involved in a situation, seeing what happens to it. I mean, if there had been sort of harmony throughout the group, they wouldn't have had a story. It would just been, here's a group of people doing this, and that wouldn't have been much of a story. But because it was so disharmonious and it was so unruly, I think that was their story and that's what they had to tell. But you don't know in these situations. You could go in and everyone could be jolly nice and nothing happens. So
post-production is what you really focus on now. You talk about your company and your act and you're freelance and
yeah.
You're not working for any big television corporation anymore directly, but you're able to, people come to you with a project. Do you initiate or is that the way it works? They come to you?
Usually they come to us. Yeah, I have been involved in some development projects where you actually involved from the inception when people are saying, well, we've got this idea, what do you think of this? And I have been involved in some what's called development and trying to sell things to broadcasters because there's a different way of doing it. You can take an idea to a broadcaster and ask them to obviously fund it and give you a budget for it. You know, it's not always done off your own kind of steam. So a lot of documentary series you'll see on big channels and on the channels like Netflix have an original inception, an idea which they'll take to the channel and have fully funded. In that case, then the network will then have their idea of how this works and how they want it to appear on screen. So it has its disadvantage in that sense because you are then trapped by what the broadcaster wants. And if it's sort of slightly offensive or doesn't fit with their remit, then obviously they have the final say on everything. But that is the more traditional way of getting a programme on air, is to go to the broadcaster with the idea first.
Well, Molly, you're obviously going to bring a lot to our programmes, bring some new thinking. And I'm particularly struck by the reference to right back at the beginning, you talked about the difficulty for women. And I was thinking, yeah, I remember you watched the credits on a film and one of the credits is Best Boy. And I've never yet seen Best Girl.
No, you wouldn't have seen that. Yeah, I think the industry has changed. When I first joined, especially in post-production, you didn't see any female camera people, any soundies, all men. And I can understand the cameras back then were pretty heavy and I can understand there would have been a kind of strength issue. But now cameras are really lightweight and you do see a lot more female camera people. Sound were the last kind of bastions of the male dominance. There are some sound mixers and sound recorders who are female. You've seen a lot of female directors now and a lot of female editors, which is great to see. So I think the balance is probably around 60-40 now. It's much better than it was. But you still see a lot of women on the production management side as well. We're getting there. It's still an ongoing process.
Thanks very much.